Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio in real time via ZipWhip landline texting at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
City elections are next Tuesday, and this morning we have one of the candidates for mayor with us. Richard Dines is here this morning. Richard, good to have you in this morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Ted. Thank you so much for having me.
It's good to have you here. You and the mayor were involved in a debate a week ago that I told you beforehand that I thought was really one of the better debates I've ever gone to. Very, very respectful, but you both laid out your positions very well, and it's good to have you in this kind of setting this morning.
Yes, the contrast between myself and the mayor should be relatively clear. I'm not part of the inside group within the city. I'm arm's length from all the business interests in town, so I can bring a clear-eyed view to the city's interest, the citizens' interest, and I think that's a very important point that needs to be put out there. I also bring a more diverse background and business experience. I wasn't a real estate broker. I'm not tied to the real estate community. I actually ran a business. I had to build a business. I had to deal with employees and taxes, meeting payroll. And so I understand what business friendly means, and I also understand that being a business friendly entity doesn't mean you sue your you get into lawsuits with your investment community. That's just not the percentage move.
What got you involved in this race? What made you decide? Right now, you're on the Planning Commission.
That's right. So I'm vice chair of Planning Commission right now, and I've been watching the flow of development projects. The larger ones are the ones that hit Planning Commission, and I've also watched how council about 2/3 of the time disregards the recommendation made by Planning Commission, which is a source of frustration for many people because the Planning Commission, is the body created by the Commonwealth of Virginia to help represent the citizens' interests to the city council, and to be disregarded so often is a frustrating experience. I was considering running for council in a few years, but then I watched how the Mill District redevelopment plan, which is a very difficult plan to achieve, got shredded by the city and degraded, and it was a situation where the leadership of the city needed to get behind it. Mm-hmm. The leadership of the city needed to understand that the value proposition to the residents in the area, and to the citizens at large, and to the city from a tax-based point of view, all weighed in the positive side, and that the city didn't, through missteps on the city's part and a lack of leadership on the mayor's part. That left me in the position of, okay, I can run for council in 2 years, then I have to spend another 2 years with the same mayor, and I thought I'd just change the answer and go ahead and run for mayor, and then we would be in the position where we can have some genuine leadership.
How has campaigning gone? I mean, what kind of experience is? I guess this is the first time you've run for anything.
Yes, this is my first run at public office. This is my first political campaign, and it's actually been extremely gratifying. The volunteers that showed up literally in the first day are impressive, and they work very hard. And the actual campaigning part, going out and knocking on doors and talking to people and listening to what their concerns are and having them unload on you all the baggage of, this is going right or this is going wrong, is actually a gratifying experience. And in being in the position where I can use my own voice and I can speak my own mind is liberating.
And I guess it's interesting you talk about people unloading and talking about these things, because we were talking before we got going just about the debate last week at City Hall was standing room only. You don't always, sometimes you wonder, are people really engaged? Because you don't see a lot of people oftentimes at council meetings or even running for office.
Yeah, so it was a full room, and it was a full room at Fred Exchange as well, the technology debate that occurred 2 days earlier. And we have an engaged population, and that's good. A lot of people are very aware of the race. I go knock on doors. People know who I am. I even had a situation where I was knocking on a door in a neighborhood that I hadn't been in, and I had two children answer the door, and I asked for their parents, and they're like, "Oh, we know you. We can open the door." I'm like, "No, you don't know me," and they're like, "No, yeah, we know you. You're running for mayor." And that's how so there's a lot of community interest. It's a marvelous thing.
When you go to your website and your website makefredbetter.com is the website for Richard Dines for mayor. Right away, you see we can achieve more, and Fredericksburg needs strong leadership. And those I know are two things that you'll yes. hear and you'll probably be talking about this morning.
Yes, leadership matters. It always matters. When you have opportunities that first leaders go find the opportunities, and that's very important, and they need to pursue them. The good deals for the city and the good deals for the residents aren't going to just drop in our lap or walk in our door. We actually have to go find those, and then when we find them, we need to work to enable them. When a bad deal walks in the in the door, the leader also needs to know to say no. And why, and be clear about it, and be transparent about it, so that if a proposal isn't going to fly, if it's not a good deal for the city, say no, move on, and go find something better. And those are words I actually used when I was interviewing for Planning Commission. My very first words were, "If you want better deals, sometimes you have to say no." Because the person on the other side of the table will learn that if you know your expectations are higher, and setting the tone, setting the expectations is very, very important, and that is part of leadership.
You mentioned the one of your we were talking just about motivations to run and being on the Planning Commission. I guess being on the Planning Commission is really a good stepping stone to City Council because you are seeing a lot of the planning issues.
Yeah, you see the larger ones come through. The bigger deals that involve rezoning, changes in zoning, are things in compliance with the comprehensive plan. Those are the questions that you get asked. You also help write the comprehensive plan, and you get involved in discussions on the UDO, Unified Development Ordinance. So it's a good position to observe, even if you aren't in a position to actually control. And it's also you can influence policy there, but you can't actually set it. So yeah, so it's great. It's a perfect place to launch from, but it's not actually a position where you can make decisions.
Richard Dines here. He's a candidate for mayor in Fredericksburg. When we come back, we'll start jumping into some of the issues going on in the city this morning. MakeFredBetter.com is his website. More on Town Talk this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. You can weigh in on today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, your host, Ted Schubel.
Richard Dines is here this morning with us. He is a candidate for mayor. Elections in the city, May 3rd, on Tuesday in Fredericksburg. And one of the candidates for mayor here, Mayor Greenlaw, will be here tomorrow to talk about her issues. Let's, Richard, jump into things. The Renwick building, the old courthouse, is a big topic. It sits right now, and council's looking at what to do with it.
Yes, there it sits, and there it gets studied. And we don't need to turn this into another Maury High School story where we wait, a decade or more to figure out what to do with it.
Yeah.
It's important. The preservation story here is important. It's a historic asset, is a city asset. The city's not going to let go of it, and the city is already obligated to do what is right and necessary to maintain and preserve the building. But there's also an opportunity sitting before us right now to engage, to enable a group that has been seeking a venue for a long, long time. And it's something that will benefit the city, and that's to make it a performing arts campus. When this idea was brought to me, this isn't my idea. I listen to people and then I assess. And when I got hit very early on in the campaign for regarding a performing arts center. It's been a long held desire of the community. And when you look at that, you imagine the millions of dollars going out to buy a facility, to equip it, and then you've got that debt, and debt and nonprofits are a bad thing. And then, you know, Kim Leone, who's the chairman of the Fredericksburg Arts Commission, came to me and she's like, well, you know, there's the Renwick building. Now, I served on a jury in the Renwick building, so I was familiar with it. And I researched my land title in the basement, so I was familiar with the underneath. But she started piecing out the story. And there's a very, very good story here from not just, you know, we have an asset and here's a use that's appropriate to the structure, and we enable a community to have a facility, and that community has been contributing to the city for so long. It also makes tremendous economic sense to the city. We get a non-performing asset into use. So instead of it being a cost center for the city, it can actually be a revenue source to the city. And that's even before we get into tax benefits from people going to restaurants and bars or shops or whatever. But also the revenue picture for the operations hang together, because they're talking about not just having three or four performing arts groups coming and music venues, but they're also talking about having a private performing arts school. And between those two, between the arts operations or the performing arts operations and the having the art school operating out of the bottom level, you're talking about $700,000 a year in gross revenue. That's a very, very powerful story. That tells you that it is quite likely that this could be revenue neutral in the second year of operation. And that is an enabling factor. So here we have a non-performing asset that the city has available, and we have a community that has sacrificed and self-organized and has demonstrated the ability to operate. So we should give them the opportunity to succeed. And it will be an arm's length relationship between, you know, the city and that group. We're not going to just turn over the keys. It will be a contractual relationship, and I'll have terms and conditions, and we will do what is right and necessary by the city to protect the taxpayers, protect the residents. But it is just an obvious yes. It is an obvious move out on this idea. And it's plan A, and frankly, nobody's come to me with a plan B. I haven't seen a plan B that is something other than let's continue to study it, which frankly is, you know, studying it and then studying how to use it. Studying the restoration and studying how to use it, that's the 10-year plan. And we don't have 10 years to wait.
So it sounds like what you're bringing up would be something that could happen quickly.
Yes. I would get right underway with this. The first step from the city's, from, you know, as mayor, my first step would be to have a motion on council to direct the city manager to put together an RFP for proposals on this. And that is something that happens side by side while we complete the study on the preservation portion of it. It is done all the time that you take a historic building that needs work, needs preservation, yet it is in continuous use the entire time. And that's done everywhere. It's done in Europe. It's done in the United States. And we should do it here. The idea that we're going to serialize all these processes and wait maybe a decade, like we did with the Murray High School, to actually get somewhere, to me is a ridiculous suggestion. It's not the way government should work. It's not the way we should work.
And a fine arts center has been something that has been talked about and sites looked at for a long time.
Yes. Before this idea was brought to me, I was not yet a candidate. I was still gathering signatures, and I got smacked literally between the eyes by a member of the arts community saying, where's my performing arts center? And to be honest, I had to educate myself. And then I started trying to identify buildings that could possibly be suited. And honestly, I was coming up empty with that. I mean, there's a church over by the bus stop, right? And they want $1.5 million for that. And I was thinking about, you know, I ran a business for over a decade. So I've had plenty of employees come up and say, oh, we should do this and we should do that. And I'll be like, okay, that's 100,000, that's 200,000. And then I got to figure out how we're going to pay for it. What's my return on investment? What's my channel and distribution? How am I going to sell the product or the service? And I just naturally do that whenever somebody walks up to me and says, we should do X, Y, or Z, particularly at a performing arts center. The conversation of the Renwick was amazingly easy because of all these things got hit on the positive side. And I actually haven't seen a negative side yet.
Well, and it's a historic building that there are pictures of it
absolutely.
From the Civil War.
Absolutely. The architect who designed it came here before he went up to do the Smithsonian.
Mm-hmm.
Those are pretty good apples. So the city is absolutely obligated to preserve it. So here we have an opportunity to meet a need of a community that brings vibrance and richness to the city, the arts community. We have the ability to take a non-performing asset on the city's books and make it a performing asset, right? And we get to help finance the preservation goal of preserving it. And this is even before we get into the secondary effects of additional tax revenues, including increase in property values for some of the properties downtown, because they're going to be 2-3 blocks away from the Performing Arts Center. It's a much better plan than the sometimes suggested, spend $10 million on the library to have a dual use facility. And that's an area where, by the way, the parking situation is worse. It's less centrally located. There's very little existing retail and restaurants and shops in the area. Renwick is central. It's the perfect location. I honestly don't understand why it's not underway right now. I'm fortunate. My campaign is benefiting from this because simply the mayor didn't pick up the ball and run with it. Because the ball was there.
Speaking of parking, you mentioned about parking around the library. I'm sure you've heard a lot going door to door. I have all kinds of problems when I go downtown looking for parking.
I actually ride my bike downtown because it's faster.
Oh, that would
I routinely beat people in cars between where I live, which is near the Second Wall Tavern, and downtown. I hop on my bike truth is that I don't quite stop at the red lights. I treat them as yield signs, but I routinely beat people downtown and because I can chain my bike up to some of the bike stands or the occasional lamppost, which I'm sure is also not entirely illegal, but we should have more of that. Parking downtown is a serious issue. I hear it from the merchants. And it's even more nuanced, the 2-hour limit. They actually object to the 2-hour limit. Why? Because an individual who wants to come down and have lunch and do some shopping can't do it in 2 hours. And so they're stuck without being able, they have to go move their car. We have all these different parking lots around the city, all these surface lots. People learn the 2 or 3 that they go to, but nobody actually knows all of them. It's something, again, where the city has been studying and has some ideas and where they might put a parking deck. But we haven't gotten to yes anywhere, and we desperately need to get to yes. We've done some good moves, hopefully, that will come to fruition with Liberty Place and with, getting additional parking there. It's a legitimate question to ask whether, we should have invested or agreed to invest $2 million in that, but that's water under the bridge. That decision was made, and so we need to proceed on it. We need to honor our agreement on that rather than continue to wait. Sedona is bringing a lot of people into town, and it is also severely impacting the parking situation in town. So on one hand, it's a success story because more people learning about Fredericksburg, downtown Fredericksburg, and having that positive experience. And on the flip side, residents and other merchants and even Sedona is affected by the parking situation that comes with that. So as mayor, I will make sure that we meet the parking needs of any new development.
Richard Dines here. He is a candidate for mayor in the city of Fredericksburg. You've talked about little bit about your business background. What is your background?
So let me go through that. So I'm an engineer. I'm an electrical engineer from Johns Hopkins, and I did some graduate level studies in control systems, which is deeply mathematical and domain. In 1999, I started an IT consulting company called Silkspeed with 2 other partners, and we did what we call high-touch consulting. We were a set-piece group that did product development. A lot of our customers were startups or in the defense industries. Rather than turn into a large body shop where we're putting bodies in seats and software developers in seats, and we were managing the operations, we preferred to continue to do the development. And so we became almost a boutique consulting shop. People would come to us because they knew who we were and they knew we could solve what we called hard problems. And so we were basically a product development team for companies. They would come to us, and oftentimes they would come to us when they had a project in distress. I was the CEO of that operation. I negotiated the contracts on it. I had to deal, you know, with financial issues with customers, and, you know, customers, happy ones and unhappy ones. Mm-hmm. And I got to deal with all those issues. And I had to be able to represent the company at all levels, at any level. And there are a lot of issues. It's a very dynamic situation. And meeting payroll is just one of those things. Every small business owner that's out there that's listening to this, meeting payroll is just one of those things that until you've done it, you don't understand. And that's not the kind of experience. It's hard won experience. I was actually talking to a small business owner last night, and he was very excited because for the first time in about 18 months, he was excited that he felt comfortable that he was going to be able to make payroll in his company, and that's a big thing. From there, I became we ran that company for over a decade, and we decided to shut it down to start a biometric startup with a fourth individual. So it was the same three partners. And I became CTO of that operation, which is a different lane and a different role. There you are more evangelizing and you're doing more of the science and the math part of it. And then you're also dealing with customers at the PhD level. And you need to be able to represent the company's interests at that level. And also, you're dealing with the investment community. So you're doing pitches. You're asking for millions of dollars. You're doing the 30-second elevator pitch and trying to get somebody to yes on something. And then you also have people who are handing you term sheets from the investment community that are just full of just really bizarre terms and conditions that you would never, ever say yes to. And so you get good at reading that, looking at it, and saying, no, not over my dead body, no. And that's the way it works. When somebody tries to hold a big carrot in front of you, there's a lot of temptation, and you learn to stick to your guns and say no. It requires a lot of diligence, a lot of principle, and sometimes a lot of courage because you are oftentimes betting the company.
You've done a lot. It sounds like a lot of your real life experience are things that as mayor and as someone representing the city that would come in helpful.
Yeah. So it puts me in an interesting position. Unlike my opponent, nobody voting for me is going to ever have to be concerned about whether, you know, which childhood friend I'm sitting across the table with, which former business associate I'm entering negotiations with. I'm arm's length from the entire business community downtown in the city, yet I ran a business. So I understand their concerns. I understand their interests, but I represent the city. I represent the residents' interests. And I literally owe nothing to anyone in town. And that's an important thing. I have no business interest in town. I bring a clear-eyed view to the city's agenda. And that's an important thing the mayor needs to be able to do.
How long have you lived in Fredericksburg?
10 years.
Okay.
10 years. I moved in 2006. I retired to a townhouse off Callan Boulevard. Hotchkiss Circle, actually. And before I moved all the way downtown, before I bought a house, I literally walked the entire city to learn all the different neighborhoods. And it was a fascinating experience. It was a lot of fun because we have a lot of really cool neighborhoods. They're all very unique. And to me, I say keep the Fred in Fred. And that's what I mean is the unique character of all these neighborhoods that we have, be it the island, or Darby Town, they're all, you know, above the university, below university. I mean, they're all, you know, college heights. The whole thing is they're all unique. They all have their own look and feel. I'm a big fan of front porches. So when we get into conversations over what the look and feel should be like, I'm a front porch guy. Why? How do I know my neighbors from our front porches? You know, we're not like best buddies, close friends, but we know each other. And the reason we know each other is because we, you know, drink a glass of wine or have a beer on our front porch. And it's one of those community building things. And I'm excited. One of the things I'm excited about Liberty Place is that instead of the completely anonymous condo life, you know, they're putting together, they're actually building in some space reserved for the residents. So they effectively can have a backyard and a place to congregate as a community that is independent of, you know, the surrounding you know, the surrounding public spaces. And I think that's an important thing. I'm sure it's not the first time it's been done, but it may be the first time it's been done in Fredericksburg.
Richard Dines here, candidate for mayor in Fredericksburg. MakeFredBetter.com, his website. We'll be back. When we come back, we'll talk about the river and preservation on Town Talk this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's 8:33.
Okay, listen, we got to talk about something.
Talk done right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. You're listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Got an opinion about today's show? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Now, here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Richard Dines with us. He's a candidate for mayor in the city of Fredericksburg. Elections in the city May 3rd, on Tuesday in Fredericksburg. Richard, on your website, you spend quite a bit of time and have talked quite a bit about the river. That's something that you're very passionate about.
Yes, it is. I'm a lifelong boater, sailing, kayaking, rowing, paddling. If it's if it doesn't have an engine, I'm generally in it, and involves the water, I'm all in. And it is this, the city's plan should be to deploy its assets, be it Renwick or, in this case, the river. And in an environmentally sensitive way, of course, because it's also an environmental resource that needs to be protected. But we can do things that allow the residents to actually enjoy this asset that stretches for 6.5 miles through the city. And the city should do that. So I know we've been studying, as we are want to do in Fredericksburg. We are studying Riverfront Park, and I support Riverfront Park, but I actually have three issues with it. One of them is that the city's being set up to do all the heavy lifting and paying for it, and that could be $5 million or $10 million or $20 million, depending on which number you want to pick. And this is just a classic example where the city should be engaging with a TIF or a tax increment financing so that the people who are going to benefit financially from the park help pay for it, not in the form of additional taxes, but we obligate the funds that they would be generating tax funds to help pay for this. The second thing is it doesn't actually provide high quality water access. And I don't understand what's up with that, because if you have a riverfront park, you would like to have a dock where somebody could slide in a canoe or a kayak or stand up paddleboard. And that's really not, that is not on the plan right now. And I don't understand why not. There is no high quality water access for the residents of Fredericksburg to the river. We've got a canoe slide up in Old Mill Park, and we've got two muddy ramps, launch ramps down at City Dock. And that is it. And yet it stretches for 6.5 miles. And this brings me to my third concern with the Riverfront Park. I don't think it's nearly ambitious enough. This is a resource that the city hasn't even begun to tap into. It's one that will drive economic development and people's affinity for the city for generations to come. And we're standing idly by about it. There's the Face the River efforts. They're good. But my vision is that we have a riverfront trail. It's packed gravel, it's 12 feet wide, and it actually starts in Mayfield, right? Because we should use this to connect our disconnected neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. This is an important point. Start in Mayfield, go to Dixon Park, and then head up river to the Quarry Road. And I think we should start at Mayfield and head up river from there. And we'll learn how to get good at it, because you get good at it by doing, not studying. Nobody's gotten good by studying. You always get good at it by doing. And this will be something that will integrate our community, provide all manners of recreation resources, and provide multi-point high-quality river access for the residents of the city. I mean, the city should actually have a rowing program for James Monroe High School. You know, that is a long-held agenda item of mine that I've not yet explored, but if you talk to people who know me in town for a while, specifically, you've talked to Matt Kelly, he will tell you that, yes, Richard Dines, very, very early on, wanted to bring a rowing program. I still want to do that. This is the first time I've actually spoken about it on the campaign. So if you want to hear Richard Dines' secret agenda, it's a rowing program for James Monroe High School, because it's just a really good idea. And this will drive economic development because people will come here because they want to live here. It will attract businesses here because business owners will want to be in cool Fredericksburg, which has the historic district, which has all the good bricks and the good wood, and also has this gorgeous river that we can enjoy.
Let me ask you, you mentioned Matt Kelly, because when he's in here, he frequently talks about either here or also with city council, during city council meetings, his concern about preservation and making sure that the downtown stays unique.
Yes. Okay. So this is a hard problem. I'll just throw a few things there. Preserving historic properties is expensive. We have properties that are risk. They're privately held, and the city can't force them to maintain them, right? And so we've actually lost structures. And the house on Savia Street, is the last surviving house from the photographs. We lost that because the city did not incentivize or induce the owner to preserve it. And so, and we have another building that's actually at risk today, and that's the coffee warehouse. It's at risk today. The roof is not intact. It's a wood structure. It's going to fold in on itself if we don't do something quickly. We actually have a community group that's trying to put on a temporary roof that was reasonably appropriate from a look and feel point of view, was durable enough to put it, to take the structure out of what I would call the danger zone of imminent demise. Right. And they haven't been able to move that ball down the field. And again, we need leadership that will weigh in when these situations occur, work out how to incentivize this so that property owners, private property owners, are feel it's worth their time. It's so expensive to maintain a historic property that their property values actually decline, because if it's not in good repair, they're looking at very large checks. And it's an act of love to do this. It is absolutely, because they're not going to get their money out of it, and they know it. My neighbors across the street completely restored their 1830 house. All right. They're not going to get their money out of that. They know it. It was an act of love. And so the city needs to work out a way to incentivize that. I mean, it could be here's one idea, is treat it as sunk cause or sunk cost. Assume the structure actually does catastrophically fail and gets cleared out the way the Sophia Street does. Although I think we should have had we need an independent view on the Sophia Street situation. That should not have been taken out same day. That was a travesty and an error, and there should have been some accountability, and there was none, and that's unfortunate. But just imagine maybe we just relieve all taxes for a period of time. All right. That might actually not be enough to actually meet the need, but maybe we help with financing. I don't know what it is, but I tell you, once those good bricks and that good wood's gone, it's gone. We cannot get it back. And we don't want fake history. We want real history.
Richard Dines here, candidate for mayor in the city of Fredericksburg. You mentioned early on, and I'll give you a chance to explain it, because some people may not be aware, you mentioned the city suing the city.
Yes. What's up with that? I do not understand. So in the debate, the mayor claimed that, yes, we're a business-friendly city. I've had many business owners tell me pointedly the opposite. And I've had one business owner say, well, yes, except for when we were setting up operations in Stafford County, it was way easier. But then we have a situation where we have people who are investing, and they're investing millions of dollars, and they meet all the terms and conditions in the process that the city has laid out in this specific case. We have the situation with the National Bank building and a set of brownstones that are proposed on George Street, where an investor, or actually a set of investors, have invested significant amounts of money, have risked their, in one, you know, for one group of them, their personal fortunes are on the line here. They appear to have met every part of the process required to do their project. And yet the city council, under the mayor's leadership, and the mayor's part of this, stopped that process and thereby triggered multiple lawsuits. And here's the crazy part. The city is funding both sides of the lawsuits. So I guess some people who are half full will say, well, at least we'll win on one side. But right now, my best estimate is that we've spent $80,000. That's your and my tax dollars hard at work. And we're probably going to spend another $80,000 on this before it goes to trial. And oh, yes, it is going to trial. Come on, really? $160,000. How else could we spend that money? Oh, wait, we could actually fully fund every organization that requested funding from the city and was not fully funded could have been funded out of that $160,000. What are we thinking? But there's even a bigger message here. And this is almost a bad Ronco ad. How are you going to attract investors from outside the city to come into the city? And we need investors, right? We need people who can invest millions of dollars on these projects so that we can redevelop the portions of the city, such as the Mill District, all right? Maybe in Darbytown around the railroad station. Mm-hmm. These are big, expensive projects. But if we're in the business of suing investors who bring something and meet all our processes, what's the message there? And I've spoken to investors, the investment community, and they've told me point blank, you know, until there is literally regime change in Fredericksburg, they don't want to come in because they view it as an insider's game. And by the way, that's something I bring to the table. I am not an insider, and that will be a day one difference under a Dines administration. Is that, you know, that stuff ends and the buck does stop here.
Richard Dines here, candidate for mayor in the city of Fredericksburg. MakeFredBetter.com. We'll wrap this up when we come back in Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. You can weigh in on today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, your host, Ted Schubel.
Richard Dines, our special guest this morning. He is one of the candidates for mayor in the city of Fredericksburg. City elections, May 3rd, on Tuesday in the city. Incentives are something that we hear all kinds of things about. What do you think about the city's incentives program?
Well, it's difficult to say that there actually is one. There are a couple different levels of incentives here. There's the technology corridor where we're relieving BPOL taxes and things like that. And they haven't been effective in terms of attracting new organic businesses to come and grow here. And we need to revisit that. But the incentives that most people get worked up about are the ones where public money is used to finance private things. And Liberty Place is the one that's on the table right now. And that it comes in two forms. Right now, the city is going to be contributing to around $2 million for parking. All right. That's an investment decision that we've made and that we should stick to. We'll get another 90 parking spaces in an area that critically needs parking, and we should follow through on that. That developer has come in and they call it a TIF, but really it's a tax abatement. They want a portion of the property taxes that they would pay to be rebated back to them after they've paid them. The net story here is that instead of when the project is completed, them paying $900,000 a year in taxes, the city would actually net only $700,000 a year for the period of 10 years. And then at the end of 10 years, the city would then return to $900,000. So is it worth $200,000 a year to do that? And that's a time value money thing. But another way to look at it is, do you still take the $700,000 a year on a program, on a project that is pretty much locked and loaded and ready to go? And at a period of time when the city's costs are outstripping its additional tax revenues, we'd had a $500,000 hole in our budget last year. Our taxes are about to pop up on that. But that's not actually the incentive discussion we need to be having. We actually need to have a policy on this topic. Mm-hmm. City Council actually needs to come to an agreement internally on what is an appropriate TIF and what is not an appropriate TIF. Are TIFs required exclusively to finance public things such as a park or a trail or a performing arts center? Or is it acceptable for the city to use a TIF to help a developer get financing for what they're proposing? That's a policy decision, and it's clear that City Council hasn't even discussed it because they're holding negotiations amongst themselves at open City Council meetings while that same project is being discussed and possibly voted on and in front of the investor. And there's nothing that's more frustrating to the investment community than to not know the deal that they're walking into. This policy isn't so much necessary. It's not just necessary so that we can efficiently operate as government. We need it so that the investment community knows, understands what the rules are and what the city will accept and won't accept. And until they know that, there is a sea of investors that won't touch the city. They will not come into Fredericksburg. They have plenty of other places to invest their money. And this makes Fredericksburg distinctly investment unfriendly when we have this situation. So this is not something where we need to fly by the seat of our pants at every single city council meeting where it comes up. That is the wrong strategy. It is a strategic blunder from the in terms of the future of the city. And yet it's something that the mayor finds acceptable, and I simply do not. I mean, as a business owner, you know, that I wouldn't walk into that situation. It's not worth the risk.
Just a couple minutes left. Richard, I'll give you a chance to kind of give a close here and,
sure.
and talk to the residents of the city of Fredericksburg.
Thank you. Well, first of all, Ted, thanks for bringing me on here and you know, leading this conversation and allowing me to speak freely. You know, that's the portion of the campaign I love, is the ability to speak freely. Fredericksburg has an enormous amount of opportunity before it. But we're just slowly drifting sideways. We are not really making the progress we need to make. We have a arts community that has sacrificed amongst themselves and built a community amongst themselves and if you took that community away from Fredericksburg, it'd be a pretty barren place. We have neighborhoods that have been waiting for 50 years for something good to happen. You go to the Mill District, residents of the Mill District don't feel safe walking downtown. I object to that. That's not an acceptable thing. And we've had solid plans to solve that situation, and the city hasn't gotten behind it. I want to change that answer. I want to lead the city forward. And so I'm asking those of you out there in the audience, I'm asking you to vote for me, for mayor. I'm asking for your vote. And I'm asking you to bring a friend, because it's an important thing, because friends don't let friends vote alone. And it's a... And this is an important election. I know there's some apathy because Fredericksburg's been facing the same old for so long. And I guarantee you, with a Dines administration, you will not get the same old. Thank you so much.
MakeFredBetter.com is your website. Thank you for running. Thank you for coming in here this morning, Richard. And like you say, encourage people to vote. It's next Tuesday, 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. The polls are open in Fredericksburg.
And you can also vote on April 30th, in-person absentee at Big Ugly, 5th floor, from 9 to 5.
Thanks for mentioning that. Richard Dines, good luck, Richard, on Tuesday.
Thank you so much.
That's it for Town Talk. Mayor Mary Catherine Greenlaw is here tomorrow. See you tomorrow on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA. I'm